Welcome to the 17th episode of A Change of the Chairs. My name is Ryan Lowe, and my goal is to educate listeners, especially young ones, on the most pressing issues in this world by interviewing different experts who can teach us how to make a difference. So today, we have a very special guest that we've seen here before on episode 6 of A Change of the Chairs, our very first two-time guest. Today, we have Ms. Rebecca Prince-Ruiz here with us to discuss her book, this year's Plastic for July, and weigh in on some of the latest developments in the fight against plastic pollution. If you haven't seen episode 6, Ms. Prince-Ruiz is the founder and executive director of Plastic for July, an amazing organization that brings millions of people around the world together to help achieve their vision of a plastic-free environment. Whether it is living plastic-free for the entire month of July or cutting out one type of single-use plastic, they've gotten about 326 million participants across 177 different countries in July 2020 alone. So now, allow me to reintroduce Ms. Prince-Ruiz. So, hi, Ms. Prince-Ruiz. It is so great to see you again. And I am truly excited to talk to you about your book and the very latest with Plastic Free July. So, how have you been, and how are things with COVID in Australia?
Oh, thank you very much for that warm welcome, Ryan. It's so lovely to be chatting to you again. I learned a lot from our last conversation. I'm sure I will again today. I live on the west, like you. I live on the west coast. Of my country. I live in the west coast in Perth in Western Australia, and we have, unlike our friends and family on the east coast in Australia, we have been very quite isolated from COVID, haven't been too badly affected. We've only had a few lockdowns. We haven't really had much in the way of community transmission, so we've been really fortunate in that way, but we are quite cut off and isolated from friends and family, so that's really tough for a lot of people. But I'm sure, like everywhere, it's coming. So it's interesting times that we live in.
Well, I hope you'll be able to see your family soon.
Yeah, me too. But great to be able to talk online at least.
Yeah, that's good. So the first reason that I wanted to have a second interview with you was about your book. You recently wrote a book called Plastic Free and kindly mailed a copy to me after our first interview. I finished reading it within weeks. So it's an important book, and I really wanted to help spread the word. So let's start with some generic questions. Why did you decide to write the book?
Well, I decided to write the book because I was invited to write the book. I was really, really fortunate. I don't consider myself a writer, but I knew I had a really important story to tell, the Plastic Free July story. And the subtitle of the book is, so it's called Plastic Free, the inspiring story of a global environmental movement and why it matters. And I was actually approached by our publishers in Sydney at New South. They'd seen me on a TV program called The War Against Waste, and they were really frustrated with the supermarkets and not still offering free plastic bags. And the conversation started from there after they gave me a call. And for me, it was important to not just have the story of this environmental movement on a website or on social media, but to capture it in a timely way so we could take it to a wider audience. And I was really fortunate to co-author the book with a delightful woman that I met, Joanna Atherfold Finn, who's a beautiful writer. I'd read one of her books of fiction, and she'd written a book about short stories, which I really loved. And she took the Plastic Free July challenge herself in her family, and I only got to meet her after we signed this book contract together. But I really wanted with this book, Ryan, I didn't And I'm so thrilled that you read it. I wanted to write it not just for the converted or people who were already doing it. I wanted it to be a story for everyone, and I wanted it to be told in a way that wasn't just for environmentalists. And I knew there were so many wonderful stories of change that people had made in their own lives and then taken it into their schools and their communities and their workplaces, and how that our individual actions can ripple out to inspire others, and how grassroots change is really at the seed of systems change. And I feel like that's such an important message. And Joanna was a wonderful person to write with, to really bring all of those threads together and those stories together and tell this tale in a way which I hope others can take that impulse, I guess, and use it to make change on whatever issue it is that they're concerned about. And then we were very fortunate to have the book picked up by Columbia University Press. So they published it, the copy that we sent you, the beautiful hardback in North America and the rest of the world. So that's the story of how, though I never set out to be a writer, I was really fortunate to be able to tell this story.
Well, about what you were saying earlier about wanting this to be a book for everyone, I'd say you did a great job. I mean, anyone could pick up that book and just be inspired. So let's think for a second. First, you made a local organization that's cleaning up plastic. Then it became a global organization of change making. And now you've also written a book. I mean, I'm always in awe of your incredible work.
Oh, thank you, Ryan. Well, I think there was a step before that. For me, I never set out to set up an organization or to start a global movement. It started with seeing the problem of plastic waste, or it was really waste, but plastics in particular. So seeing it for myself for the first time, seeing what happens as an end result of my consumption, and realizing that I needed to take responsibility. So it really did start with that personal taking responsibility and making change in my own life. And I think if others hadn't embraced it also and taken it on, it wouldn't be what it is today. And I think it's that, one of the most powerful things that I've learned from this is that others share the same concerns that I have, and it's easy to often feel like we're alone, whereas when we take action, even if it's just doing that tiny small things in our own lives that we can have control over when everything else might seem overwhelming, that's a really important and really powerful thing for us to do. So it gives me hope that others said yes and took it on, and this work is now the result of that, and it's the efforts of many.
Well, it's just like you were saying about the ripple effect. So your book features...
Absolutely.
So your book features many notable people and their views of the plastic problem, from burning plastic to sailors in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch to restaurant owners trying to make their own difference. First of all, let me say that it's incredible that you went all around the world to include these firsthand experiences and the stories that come with them. So which of these stories most stood out to you and why?
Oh, that's a really tricky question, Ryan, because they're all important. But like one of the stories which I really love that I'd love to share with you, because it's a story that happened here, but there was someone in your country who was a really important part of that story. So each of the chapters, so there's 10 chapters in the book, and each of the chapters starts with a story. And there's lots of interviews and quotes and snippets in there. But in chapter 7, I share a story of, I'm in Western Australia.
Something's wrong with this part of the recording for some reason. This is introducing a plastic-free cafe.
Free July. And when I went into this cafe, there was this really cute wicker basket of cups. And they were all brightly coloured. Nothing was matching. And there was a handwritten sign on a blackboard next to this basket of cups, which caught my eye. And it said, recycled cups to take away. Reduce use of paper cups. If possible, please return. Drop off unwanted mugs here. And I thought, that's great. You know, like we have reusable cups or keeper cups. But sometimes people forget. And in, you know, now the takeaway disposable coffee cup is one of the most common used single-use plastic items in the world. And I thought, this is a really great idea. It's simple, probably didn't cost this cafe anything. And I chatted to the barista and I asked how it worked, and they said the cups were donated. And I said, do people just take them and not bring them back? And she said, oh no, most people will bring them back. And then sometimes people come and donate some more cups, and it just works fine. It's really easy. And I asked if I could take a photo, and I just shared it to our social media. And anyway, I went and gave the talk, and I thought, I'll just check in on this post on Instagram. And I couldn't believe it. Like 5,000 people had liked this post within a few hours. But what was even more amazing than that was all of these people saying, oh, this is a great idea. And then they tagged their local cafe and said, can you do this? And actually, I've got some mugs to help you that I'd love to give you and donate, because I just cleaned out my grandma's kitchen, or I've got some I don't no longer need. And by the next morning, I think it was something like 15,000 people around the world had liked and commented and shared this post, and it went really viral. And I was back at the same cafe the next morning having a coffee. I started chatting to the barista, and she said to me, because obviously I don't look like a social media influencer, and she said to me, oh, was it you that took that post? The owner wants to meet you. So I ended up in the kitchen of this cafe talking to the owner of the cafe, and apparently the post had been shared by a woman called Melissa Joan Hart, who's an actor. She was living in Connecticut. She was in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And she'd reshared that post on her Instagram. I think the United Nations Environment Program had commented on it. It just went viral. It was in the news in Australia. I'm not sure how far the news story spread about this Hollywood actor who's sharing this post, made this small cafe in this small town go viral. And, you know, the great thing, and then, you know, more people were saying, oh, let's do it in my cafe. And Melissa had shared it because she was had been trying to get her town to ban straws and was really concerned about this plastic thing. And I just thought it was such a beautiful story. You know, ironically, you know, in the news article, they didn't even mention Plastic Free July. But that's not the point. The point, and that kind of almost made it better for me. It's just like somebody had this great idea. Other people saw it. People embraced it. People shared it. And it was such a simple idea that could make a real difference. And sometimes we think solutions have got to be technical, that you need money and you need to spend all this time, and it's really difficult to make change. Whereas actually change can be as simple as a basket of cups and a sign on a blackboard or a piece of paper. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. It's the simplicity of the idea. And I've loved going to cafes now, you know, in my travels, and you see that in so many different creative ways. At the moment, less so because of some concerns about COVID, but it's still, to me, symbolic of how we can make change, and it doesn't need to be complicated, and we can do it today. We don't yes, we need business to change and we need our governments to change, but at the end of the day, we can change, start making change right now.
Yeah, well, off of that, I feel that these stories help people see that they too can make a difference. And I thought that was really great to include in your book. So, how did Plastic for July go earlier this year? What were some of the numbers this year that you can share with us?
Yeah, so it's been so heartening to see people continue to do Plastic Free July over the last 2 years, so since the pandemic. So it's a tough time, you know, and in, you know, even like even within my country is so much tougher for friends and people living in Sydney and Melbourne that were under really hard lockdowns in July. But people still continue to take part, do what they could with what they had and under the circumstances. So we've done a, we were really fortunate this year in September to have a global survey done. So we've got a much better handle on our numbers, and we've had to do a bit of a revision on our numbers. So this year our estimates that 140 million people took part, and we know that people signed up from 190 countries. And when Ipsos did this survey globally, Ryan, the results just blew me away. So 29% of global consumers are aware of Plastic Free July. Like this tiny little grassroots campaign that's, you know, you can see my office where we're talking via Zoom, we've got our video on in the background, like it's, you know, there's just a few of us working here. And a campaign that's recognised by so many people, and of those 29% of people that were aware, 13% participated, and that's such an exciting result that has really been the efforts of all the work that we've done over the last 10 years. This certainly didn't happen overnight, and what is also really good news is that, because people often say, oh, why is it just July? You know, it should be plastic free all year. And of course, we don't want people to just make change in July and then the 1st of August go back to using plastic bags and straws and water bottles, etc. But we know that 87% of people who take part make one or more changes that become new habits. And really importantly, we know that the changes that people make in their own lives adds up to make a real difference. So together in 2021, our participants reduced their overall waste at home. And this is beyond plastic, because I think, you know, as you would know, as you start to reduce your plastic waste, you also start to reduce your food waste and other forms of waste, because you become more aware and you're not, you know, you might need one avocado and you're going to buy one avocado, not four on a plastic tray wrapped in plastic wrap and three of them are going to go off, right? So we know that our participants together reduced 1.2 billion kilos of waste and another 900 million kilos of recycling. So together it's like 2.1 billion kilos of waste was avoided. This is waste, this is materials and resources that were never produced and consumed and purchased in the first place. So 2.1 billion kilos, you know, double that to get pounds. That's an extraordinary amount of resources that were saved. And this isn't, I often kind of use the analogy, Ryan, and I can't remember if we talked about this last time, but that, you know, of, you know, you get home and you've left your kitchen sink on, your tap on, you know, what do? You don't grab a mop and clean up the floor, you turn off the tap. And that's what we're doing here with Plastic Free July. We're turning off the tap of plastics at the source. Yes, cleanups are important. Yes, recycling is important. But the most important thing we can do is not use consume, buy this stuff in the first place, and we're doing that in a really big way.
Well, those stats, that's incredible. 1.2 billion?
1.2 billion kilos of just waste alone, and another 900 million kilos of recycling. So 2.1 billion kilos of waste overall.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I can't even imagine how big that is. Probably should work it out in elephants or something.
Like recent times, do you think COVID had an impact either way on the participation in Plastic Free July?
Yes, I definitely do. We know that people found it more difficult to reduce their plastic waste. We also found that it was, we have a lot of media coverage of the challenge. It was really hard for people and organisations and businesses and communities who were doing this to get their stories in the media. There was a lot of focus on the pandemic. It's probably been, and this is a good thing, much more focus on the climate emergency this year. So I think it was harder to get the message out there and awareness out there this year. But get traction in a way, and particularly, you know, when communities are tackling these other pressing issues. But we still grew our participation and the involvement. So it is a challenge. I think there's also, you know, like when I started this, Ryan, in 2011, no one was talking about plastic pollution in the media. No one was talking about single-use plastic. There wasn't even a term, really. Whereas now we've had a lot of awareness of the problem, and really I think we need to change our focus as a movement and change makers involved in this issue. We've got to really focus on solutions and sharing solutions. And we don't have all of those solutions yet. I'm quite realistic about that. But I think moving forward to continue with the momentum and continue raising awareness to get people involved, we've got to start sharing solutions and really disrupting this throwaway system, because as you well know, Ryan, you know, we still go out there and we see people using single-use plastics, and there's still so much we can do.
Well, of course there are more solutions, but I would say that you have a pretty good one right now.
Thank you.
So now I'm going to shift gears to some of the hot topics this year, because I think your view is really important. The documentary Seaspiracy came out in March, and one part of it was about showing why sustainability isn't the answer. Now, picking up trash in the ocean or reducing plastic use won't help. I personally believe that everything helps, and that reducing plastic use is a very good first step in conservation and ocean protection. That's how I got started. So what do you think of their critique? I didn't think that was very fair.
Yeah, look, I'm with you, Ryan. I feel like every bit does help. And for me, the plastics issue and the plastic pollution issue, it's such a visual problem, right? It's really easy for people to wrap their minds around it. You know, you see this plastic, no one's okay with seeing that awful image of the straw up the turtle's nose or plastic floating in our oceans. And there's no denying where that came from. That's our plastic. So unlike other issues like the climate emergency, like ocean acidification, and global warming, it's hard for people to wrap their mind around the issue and understand the science. And the issue, the debate becomes around the science itself, whereas the plastics, it's kind of simple. We can link the problem with the cause, and we can do something about it every day. We can say no to that straw. We don't even need to go get a reusable straw. So for me, the plastics issue, I feel like it's a Trojan horse into bigger environmental issues. And of course, they're all interlinked, right? And I think that I do think that the issue of plastics was trivialised. For me, the ocean plastic pollution issue is shining a spotlight on the bigger problem, which is our overconsumption of resources and our throwaway disposable society. And I think that in the documentary, you know, you can see where they're coming from. They're trying to create a little bit of controversy. They're trying to create some debate to shine attention on the issue that they wanted to focus on. So for me, it was a bit of a distraction and a bit of a trivializing of what is an important problem that we need to tackle as part of a wider suite of problems affecting our oceans. And my husband's actually a fisheries scientist, and we watched it together, and it was kind of quite interesting. When we talked about it afterwards, I just said to him, oh, you know, do you think the plastics issue, we shouldn't be focusing on that? And he said, no, absolutely, because the more plastic, like, that's something we can control, not easily, but if, you know, if we look at, you know, what's happening in our marine environment to the species living there, the temperature's changing, the pH of the ocean is changing, and we've had all this habitat destruction, the plastic thing is something we can tackle, and it can take, you know, one problem can be fixed, and the more pressure our marine species are under and they're ingesting plastic, that's putting so much additional pressure on that. And if we can tackle that, that's just taking one extra pressure out of this system. So I think it was quite a simplistic look at it as the problems as well.
Yeah, all of this work is needed, and if something can help people feel connected to fight against plastic pollution, whether it's living plastic free or even writing to lobbyists, it all helps, right? It all helps. So
yeah, I think so. And people have got to fight, you know, and deal with what they're really passionate about. And there's a place for everyone. And we need everybody to take part in protecting our environment.
Yeah. Recently, COP26 concluded, and I would say that it was a lot of talk about the future, like the deforestation pledge by 2030, but not nearly enough about what can be done right now. And I may not be a lawmaker, but I don't think that it should take 9 years to say no chopping down the Amazon rainforest. So how do you feel about COP26? What could be done to fix anything they left out? And what would you say they did well?
For me personally, I was really disappointed in my own government, in our country's response and their lack of responsibility. We could and should be doing so much more. I'm a glass half full person, Ryan, and I guess despite those disappointments and thinking it's not enough action, and we don't want, and things need to happen faster. I actually am really heartened by the change in the narrative that I think we've seen over the last year in particular. I feel like more, like when I was at uni in the late 80s, we were learning about climate change then and deforestation. I feel like from a media perspective, and from a perspective of business, taking responsibility and announcing change, I feel like there's been more action in the last decade than there has been, in the last year than there has been in decades. So that gives me hope. I think the interesting thing is that it's, yet again, kind of in many ways, we're seeing businesses that are making steps ahead of government. I think what was really done well for me, I think what was done best is the fact that there was so much attention on it, and it was so much in the media. It was followed. The coverage was across social media, and I feel like as a society we were much more connected and much more informed, and I think that will be really important moving forward and give us opportunities as citizens to take action, to use it to inform the way that we vote. I think it needs to become a much more political issue, and we need to hold our governments accountable. For me, one of the most fantastic things over the last year is just seeing the economics of it change, like the fact that businesses are shifting away from fossil fuels in terms of the energy use to renewables, because the business case is stacking up, and the cost of fossil fuel, the cost of energy from renewable sources is halving at the moment. Every 8 years, I think it is. So to me, again, like the plastics issue, I think changing the when businesses start to change, and the more people that are embracing renewable energy and these and decarbonising businesses, it's going to become an expectation of the people, as well as it will become much more affordable.
Well, I'm glad you're talking about hope, because you just talking about it here is giving hope to a lot of people, including me. So you were talking about businesses a lot, and a recent study shows how big businesses, brands like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Nestle, are likely to triple their plastic production, 99% of it coming from fossil fuels. How can we, the consumers, get these big brands to not only keep selling it to us, but to ditch plastics and invest in reuse and refill solutions?
So I think we do it, first of all, we vote with our dollar, right? So we make choices as we're shopping and consuming, we make choices to reduce our to choose products that have got less plastic, and choose products without plastic, for example, and switch to those refills. So there was some interesting research that just came out mid-November that some of the big brands are cutting their virgin use of virgin plastics in packaging and committing to reuse. Committing to use more virgin plastic, so more recycled content in their packaging. So that's really, really exciting news. So this report by the Ellen MacArthur Foundation that was already released on the 16th of November. So they have a number of big global brands that have made a global commitment on plastics. And for the very first time, we've seen their use of virgin plastic having peaked. So it's early days for that, and there's obviously a lot more that needs to be done, but I'm really heartened by that. So the Ellen MacArthur Foundation has introduced targets for 2025 to create a circular economy for plastics. And yes, that reduce message is definitely, and switching to reuse and refill is part of that. But really, and really important part of that is for them for brands to commit to using recycled plastics in their packaging. Like we already have enough plastics in the world. We don't actually need to keep making more plastics. We need to use the plastics we already have. And there's a lot of opportunity for that.
Well, how interesting that some brands are trying to fix it and bigger.
And look, you're always going to have some brands that are the early adopters and leading the way. And I know, so at the moment, so since we last spoke, Brian, in October last year, in my state, the government introduced a container deposit scheme. So the bottle refund, where you get the 10 cents for cans and glass bottles and plastic bottle beverage containers. And and we've recycled in our state, and we only have a couple of million people. We've recycled, I think, about 800 million beverage containers. And I know the plastic and steel and glass that's coming out of that scheme is we're achieving record prices for the sale of that material, because so many brands have made these commitments to change to recycled content, and they can't actually buy enough recycled materials. So it's, you know, personally, I try not to use any disposable beverage container, but seeing the fact that these schemes are being introduced, and it's the beverage industry that is paying for these schemes. Seeing that happen is a really progressive sign, and seeing it work successfully as well, it's a way of the future, and we're just going to see more and more of those types of schemes, and we do need to in order to change the problem.
Glad that you brought all of this up, and you're right, it is very exciting that there are some big brands that are trying to finally be part of the solution. And so before we wrap up, is this global organization what you had in mind, and what would be in store for the next 5 years, Plastics for July?
What we would really like to do in the coming years, Ryan, as I said, we're a very small organisation. We're based in Western Australia, but from this recent research, when we've did this, Ipsos did the global survey, in around the world of people's awareness of plastic-free July and their participation. Australia is now the 14th country in the world in terms of participation. So China and India and then the US are our biggest countries, yet all our material is, you know, we're creating it here in English. So we'd really like to work and partner with other organisations to support our participants with solutions and get that messaging in their countries, get that messaging out there in different languages, create the social, new social norms that help people in other cultures. Like we really need the movement is global and we need to globalize our campaign. And the other thing that we're really going to focus on globally is supporting efforts for a global treaty on plastic pollution. And I'm not sure if you're aware of it, Ryan, but in late February 2022, the UNEA 5.2 will meet, the United Nations Environment Assembly, and there will be discussion on a global treaty. We want the global treaty not to be on, we want an internationally binding agreement. We don't want it just on marine litter. It needs to be about plastic pollution and the whole of the life cycle of this material. So we will be, we've done some recent research on that as part of that survey on awareness of Plastic Free July, and we'll be looking to share those results in January to show the public's, the general public's support for the global treaty and sharing that with governments around the world, because we know that people care. We know that people want to make a difference, and they are through Plastic Free July or other ways to reduce the plastics in their life. But you can't do everything, because you know, it's pretty hard to feed your family when you shop at a supermarket and everything's packaged in plastic. So we need business to take responsibility, and we need governments to legislate. And to do that on a global level, we really need this treaty. So that's high up on our agenda for the next 5 years.
Well, I wish you luck with what you're doing, and I know that it'll help so many people once it's ready. I think that Plastic Free July does such a great job educating people on how to best cut out plastics day to day, and that the July event is a good first step to living a plastic-free life. It certainly has changed my life and has shaped a part of who I am today, all thanks to you, Ms. Prince-Ruiz. So thank you so much again for speaking with me and for all the amazing change that you've done for every creature on this earth. And personally, thank you for inspiring me to be the aspiring activist that I am today. And I will continue to do my best work and learn from you. So that's it for A Change in the Chance, episode 17. I hope you learned how you can help with plastic pollution, and I hope you will jump in. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.